casa. Me and the devil, ooh, were walking side by side. I'm going to beat my woman until I get satisfied.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Hello, morbid movie malcontents. All my life, I've had what I thought was an irrational fear. A fear so debilitating and horrifying as to cause dysfunction of certain bowel and bladder-related safeguards. God knows I love some good old doodly-doodly Irish music, but once I start doing that dark Lord of the Dance Michael Flatley foot-stomping, hopping, dead-eyed thousand-yard stare step-dancing, I kinda lose my shit. I break out in a flop sweat, my aforementioned bowel and bladder loosen, and air raid sirens blaze in my head as every fight or flight response is activated in a massive adrenaline dump. I could never put my finger on why I feel like I am seeing the work of old Brimstoney every time people start to river dance, until I saw tonight's feature. 2025 Sinners. You'll see. This one explains everything. Holy Zamboni, I think I duped my dipes a little just talking about this.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Vault of Starling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I am one of your hosts, Jason Giaconetti, but I'm not alone. I am joined by Two True Freaks OG himself, Chris Honeywell.
Turns out I need to take a shit too.
And I'm also joined by the hair metal hero, Chris Tyler.
I think I shat myself.
Ooh.
And that laugh you hear is none other than my brother, Luke Giaconetti.
I think this is why I'm still on this show. We figure might as well deal with the devil we know.
Oh, yes.
All right, folks. So we are here this week to talk about one of the biggest, highest-grossing horror movies of 2025 so far, and that is Sinners from Ryan Coogler.
Coogler.
Excuse me. Who some of you might know from being the director of Creed and the Black Panther movies and stuff along those lines. So we are now talking about... Sinners open, to give you an idea. Budget between $90 to $100 million. Return on investment is just shy of $370 million. It opened in April here in the U.S. and was like, I don't know, this thing was red hot for a number of weeks going into the summer. One of the highest grossing R-rated movies of the year, if not the highest so far. I don't know if it'll end that way because there's a couple coming up that might... It was
getting people in the theaters. It definitely was a news item.
Mm-hmm. So, like we said, it's Warner Brothers put this out. So this is a major release. This isn't an A24 movie, which you can never find anywhere, or like one of the really small, kind of like the ones you have to go to an art house to find. This was playing major theaters across the country. And the numbers, obviously, when you're tripling your budget on your return, you can definitely tell that they kind of hit on a nerve that people definitely were interested in coming to see it. So,
well, the thing about this movie is that besides the fact that it's got a filmmaker attached to it as a writer and director, right, who has a lot of cachet right now, right, coming off of the Creed films and Black Panther, right? It's got a very unique sort of setup to it, right? Whereas when you see it, it's like, okay, it's a horror movie, but, you know, when you're looking at it as it's starting, this is a drama, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it plays as a drama. It plays it straight.
Yeah, you almost forget it's going into the horror genre.
Right,
but
if you go into this completely blind, right? You go in this as just a naive, you know, John Q moviegoer, right? I clocked it 38 minutes until the vampire shit starts going down in this movie, right? So you got a very captivating and intriguing drama, right, about these two brothers and their cousin in 1930s Mississippi. They buy the old mill and they got to turn it into a juke joint, and they're dealing with that they had left town and they had gone to war and gone to Chicago and now they're back, and all the people that they're running back into. And it's like, this is fascinating. And then because we're watching this movie, it's like, and there's going to be vampires too. Right. So I think we bemoan a lot of times that it's like, man, it's just the same old shit. Right. But this movie definitely did something different, at least with its setup and its execution. Right. And that I think was part of the, because it was something different. It's a different setting. Right. Being a period piece. It's a period that doesn't get talked about a lot. Right. It comes off as authentic. And I think that alone just kind of drew people in. It does some different things.
Well, I didn't know in the first half hour of this movie if I was going to like it. I was at the beginning of it, like the acting and the characters were selling themselves, and I was getting interest. I mean, all the characters and their stories, and every character is just fully formed and wonderfully acted, but my note is that I was going, this is structured like a Hollywood musical in some ways. Whereas mm-hmm. I didn't like the music at the beginning of it. It's something that bothers me about period movies about like the blues or anything like that, and you have this really clean, modern recorded soundtrack of like somebody picking nice, tasteful, you know, southern, you know, that, you know, post World War II era blues and stuff like that, and it got really Hollywoodized in the 80s, and it's always annoyed me since then, and like the backgrounds. So I was looking at them and I'm like, did they take old photographs and CG? It was kind of neat, but it was very stagey, and like lots of shots of them talking in a car that are obviously greens, you know, that are like, you know, obviously green screen, not like we fucked up and did it. It's almost like a conceit of old movies type of thing. Like this is sort of a theatrical presentation. But their dialogue is really realistic and kind of gritty, but like the edges are a little, you know, sanded down a little bit. But once it got going, I realized that because the music got grittier as it went along, and the whole thing got grittier as it went along. And so I realized, oh, okay. So this early part is through, you know, the kid's eyes, and he's completely, you know, he's son of a preacher and like, I'm going to be a bluesman, and he's completely naive. And the movie sort of feels like that. And it just grits down as the grit gets going. And by like 40 minutes into it, and it's not even because that's when like the vampires showed up, I was like, okay, I see what he's doing, and then I was on board with it. But it took me a half hour of like, am I going to like this or not? Because I'd heard so much about it, and people were like, there's this one sequence where they're playing music and you see, you know, people from modern times and stuff dancing, and it's the most evocative, you know, thing I've seen on a, maybe it was from seeing it on the big screen or something.
Took me
a lot of
right
people,
the fuck out of the movie.
A lot of my musician friends are like, if you're, you know, you're a musician, you will go, this is the shit. This whole movie like revolves around that scene. And I saw it and I'm like, oh, this is nicely done, but it's not this huge moving thing that I thought it was going to be. And then by the time it hits part two of Dusk Till Dawn sequence in it, I'm like, oh, now I'm fully submerged in this, because now I care for every single person in that movie, every single character except for the Klan and the vampires. But there's stakes when they start getting killed, and it
felt like he wanted to have his cake and eat it too. I just when they did that sequence, okay, that sequence where they're showing the past and the future and everything together, I got the metaphor. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
You had the narration at the beginning. The fact that you felt like you had to double down on that narration right before that scene.
That's kind of how I was feeling.
Pissed me off. And then that scene happened and it took me right the hell out of the movie. Like, I was just like, no, this is not working, bro. But, and I got what he was going for. It just did not work with me.
So part of the thing is
I thought that was a little indulgent, but the big indulgence, I think, by the director was partly one of the things I enjoyed the most, but at the same time I was like kind of like, okay, it was the very ending when Stack shows up is basically Blade in a Cosby sweater. Which, yeah, I thought was a great way to date that.
By the time we got to that, I had already stopped giving a shit. So I was just like, okay, this seems unnecessary.
But I was just like, okay, what? How did you know? And that's how he goes, how did you get here? And he's like, well, I did this, and has to go and like sort of retcon himself in for that scene. And I was like, okay, but still, I really liked how that scene. I really liked the flash forward into you know, old man time, but that was the part that I was like, okay, he had to stretch a little bit to get to this. That other scene didn't piss me off as much as it was just like, I'd been built up to like how incredible it was, and I'm like, it's, you know, it's well, like I said, done.
the thing that I liked about this, and Jay, I'll let you get, I knew you were trying to get a point, mm-hmm, is to me, like I said, the novelty of the setting, and then using not just the familiar vampire tropes, but one thing that, you know, we previously on this very podcast, right, what did we cover? We're talking about a black vampire movie, right? We covered Blackula, right, which was like a soul vampire movie, right? You know, it was when it was made and what it was aiming to be, right? It was respectful, but it was clearly from that era. Here, going back to, you know, the post-World War One, you know, the Depression era, sharecropping era, in the Mississippi Delta, the stuff that dealt with the cultural aspects, right? The Gullah aspects of this, I thought were fascinating as someone who is a adopted Southerner, right? You know, she talks about the medicine woman talks about that they're haints, and I'm curious how many viewers know what a haint is, right? If you're not familiar with, yeah, so a haint in Gullah terms is like a spirit or a ghost, and that's what she says, that a haint will take the place of a soul in the living. And if you go places where, you know, whether it's in the bayou or on the delta, even into like Charleston, anywhere coastal on that side where Gullah was spoken, right? Gullah being the kind of mixed culture between the Afrocentric and then the Caribbean cultures from the slave trade that all ended up in the southern half of the United States, right? You'll see like porches and stuff that are painted this like shade of blue. It's called haint blue, and that's to ward off evil spirits, right? So a lot of that stuff that I found was fascinating, the idea of a vampire movie through the lens of, you know, mm-hmm, traditional folk medicine and folk religion for, you know, in the black community here in the Delta, right? I thought that was fascinating. you know. So even again, I get it. This movie is it seems in a lot of ways it's set up to be successful. You've got a popular filmmaker, you've got a really good cast, right? And you've got it's just violent enough in the back half that you can buy, get people in, and then go apeshit with it, you know? So it's to me, it's like I see where you're coming from. That sequence is like, I get it, but it's like, okay, this is a little on the nose. But, you know, for me, I thought it was creative enough that I was able to really get into this. And I wasn't sure what to make of it, right, before I went in. So between the dramatic aspects and, I said, the I don't want to say novelty because that's kind of sounding dismissive, but the novelty of the setting and some of the choices in the depiction of the culture, I thought were really, really hit the mark. So, yeah, Jay, I mean, you were trying to get a point in. So
that stuff I had no problem with. It was...
Yeah. Yeah, now, Hollywood filmmakers being self-indulgent, I mean, that, you know, that's...
It didn't work as well for me as it seemed to for other people, but I'm always glad when a filmmaker swings and, you know, puts it out there. Maybe they put it out there a little too far, maybe not enough. I mean, it seems to have worked for a lot of people, but it was something different and novel. And, you know, he obviously had something, you know, an idea working. And I'd rather, you know, this is a guy who liked Coppola's last movie, you know, so I appreciate, you know, a different approach. And like, this was sort of, it had a little bit of like a post Jordan Peele movie. Like, it's got a little of the sort of approach that like Jordan Peele takes of, right, like messing with the genre and stuff and the structure and stuff like that. But it's not like a Jordan Peele copy. It's definitely just sort of working in that same sort of genre, which I really like. I really like having that. So like, as long as it's good filmmakers, you know, sort of following that route, I'm completely down with it.
So what I was going to say is that the whole movie at its core is about, obviously, loss. The entire movie is about loss. Throughout the entire thing, it's everyone who's lost things and what's been lost and what's been taken. And you know, in vampire movies, you're supposed to hate the vampires, but the reality is, when you listen to what they're saying and what they're talking about, the real evil in this movie is the Klan. And that the vampires themselves, while they are, you know, the creatures and they're killing people, whatever, the whole idea is that things have been taken from them as well. And that's one of the things that, Stack says to Smoke, when they're battling at the end, was the idea that you can now be forever. We can now be free of all this, that they've searched the entire earth to try to find the peace that they could never find, right? You know, Smoke has to kill their father as he's beating Stack nearly to death when they're children, and then they go everywhere. They've worked for Capone, they've fought in the war, and they've done other stuff. So the death that's following them, which is the vultures that are circling, the vultures that followed when the fat fuck Klansman shows up there. Like the vulture that follows him in, the vultures that are around. The vultures show up four different times in the movies, and they're always harbingers of the evil and death that they're bringing. When we first meet Rennick, when he appears to come out of the air and be running and being chased by the Native Americans who are trying to kill him, right? You know, all of that. The vultures are there as well. They're above the mill. There's all that idea tied throughout, and one of the things
I was sort of hoping the Native Americans would come back.
Yeah, so I was too.
I think what they were setting up was the idea that they could, but they knew to be inside,
yes,
before it was dark, right? Kind of thing. Like, they knew what they were doing, but they chased them as long as they could. But we had to get back, And one of the things that I find nowadays, and I don't mean this as in a negative way, because something you need it in movies. This movie has no humor in it at all. This movie is, you know, I mean, you might find it, you know, however you like look at things. There's not humor. There's no humor in this. There's no built-in laughs. No. There's none of that.
No, there's like, no. Some of the things that people say to each other are kind of, you know, people might joke around and use a funny turn of phrase or something, but there's no comedy in this. There's right. no like tension breaking levity at any point in it. It's but
right. So
yeah.
So the thing is, what I'm thinking here is, this reminds me, you know, of not Osgers Perkins' last movie, which is The Monkey, which is basically a comedy at its core, you know, with like the most horrific shit happening in the world around it. But like, it reminds me a little of Long Legs in that it's designed to be serious. It's designed to be, you know, pushing you to places you don't necessarily want to go. Even if I didn't, I mean, I'd be honest, I enjoyed Sinners more than I enjoyed Long Legs for the fact that this, even though both are very unique in their own storytelling way it's done, this to me gave me the last movie I felt this way about, but to actually hit on all the same, a lot of the same notes, was the Candyman, the new Candyman, the one that came out.
Yeah.
That movie yep. had this feel, and it has
Long Legs was bleak. This right. movie was just downbeat, but not
right.
You know, right. Just
that's what I'm saying. It's different because in Long Legs, I mean, it's you're trying to unravel Long Legs. That's the whole movie. You're trying to unravel. Okay, how is he able to control them through the doll? How like there's stuff to like, because that's the difference between Osgood Perkins as a director and Ryan Coogler as a director, right? What you're getting here is much more in line with what we got in the newest Candyman movie, the whole time you're watching this, you kind of know where we're like, you know, there's going to something bad's happening. And even though there's two different sets of trailers for this movie. There's a set of trailers for this movie that lets you know it's a horror movie. And there's a set of trailers for this movie that let you know that there's African-Americans in a place where they're partying and there's a bunch of white folks showing up. So if you didn't know that this was not a movie about the Klan trying to kill them, you 100% don't know that 35 minutes into this movie. You don't know it's about vampires, which is the thing is, obviously, you know, the idea that death is always following, death is there. There's the harbingers of death that are there in the vultures. But by the same token, you have a title in that it says Sinners. No one in this movie has clean hands. And that's the whole idea, is that neither Smoke nor Snack, who are supposed to be our heroes here, right, are truly not heroic people in some of the stuff they've done, they've gone through and done what they've needed to do. And they've done things that would normally make you to be a hero. You went and fought the war for our country and stuff, but they're also despicable human beings at their core, you know, kind of thing. They're gangsters. They've murdered people. They've stolen from people. They've done all those things. But in the community, they're not looked at as evil. They're looked at as like, well, you got out and came back. And some people revere them and some people fear them, very much in the way that if you look back at like, the movies about the mafia and stuff like that, it's a lot of those same ideas that we saw in like The Godfather and Scarface and all those gangster movies that were, you know, considered to be some of the greatest movies of all time. There's that undercurrent in there as well here. The difference being here is that this is so divorced from anything that we've ever experienced because we're not alive in the 1930s. Right. We didn't experience Jim Crow laws. We didn't live in Mississippi this time. So that makes this, we're so divorced from that, where instead of like being able to connect with whatever, and being the fact that, is that you have, you know, the blues themselves are such a, and whether you like blues music or not, it is such a distinctive sound to when and how they're playing. And the young man who's playing Sammy, it's like, I think it's either his first, this is the first major role he's ever had. His voice is so distinct And when he starts singing, it doesn't sound like somebody else. It doesn't sound like it's just this person or that person. So
Right.
they brought different
It's
elements together.
legitimately that scene with Stack looking at it, like
Yeah.
listening to him play guitar and being like, all right. And then when
Yeah.
he starts singing and he just looks over and he's
Yeah.
just like,
Well,
holy shit.
Michael B.
That's what
Jordan.
I was thinking myself. I was like, this guy can fucking
Yes.
sing.
Yeah.
Like,
Well,
it's
that's
really good.
so Kelly watched this with me about when we first got a couple months ago, right? Kind of thing. And then we watched it again today. Kelly watched it again to me. For Kelly to watch the same movie twice and have it not be League of Their Own, Rocky Horror Picture Show, A Few Good Men, like that's the only movie she ever watches more than once. She watched this with me again today. I mean, she was crocheting, but she's watching, right? So, and she said, "Man, I forgot how good that kid can sing. Like, he's really good." I was like, and I understand you can sweeten and do whatever, but like, there's something so unique about how he sounds. And
Yeah,
I
and
know,
authentic.
yeah.
It's
And it
like,
sounds like this isn't auto-tune. This isn't AI. This isn't faked. But then the idea that, and I know you guys said you didn't really like the scene with all the like, I actually. And I understand, again, I'm going to hide their opinion. I actually like the scene when he starts singing, and the idea that his connection to the music is so much deeper than anybody else there, that he's able to connect with those other people. Is it weird at first? Yes. But by the same token, and Luke's seen this movie, the movie Titus with Anthony Hopkins. Where all of a sudden you're like, this is Shakespeare, but like there's tanks and shit out of nowhere, but they're still Romans, and they're still like that's just a different way of presenting those same ideas. I like the idea there. I mean, I can guarantee you this: he didn't make this movie for a niche horror audience. This movie was made to make money. You don't have Michael B. Jordan playing two roles. I mean, Michael B. Jordan's on the screen literally 100% of the movie because there's some scenes where he's in both parts of the scene acting with himself. You know what I'm saying? So he's there so much. You are trying to make sure you capture that audience. And let's be honest, Michael B. Jordan already has a built-in audience, right? There are people who, I mean, his name's on something, they're going to go see it, right? And what winds up happening is Stax and Smoke are such different characters, even though they're twins. But even the way they speak, it's different. That just makes it seem like there's two different people. Like, sometimes what's the fucking movie with Tom Hardy where he plays both twins? I forgot that
Double
movie.
Impact?
I was gonna say Double
Oh,
Impact.
well, I thought
That's
you were talking about
Jean-Claude.
Double Impact with Jean-Claude Van
That's
Damme.
Jean-Claude Van Damme. No, I'm talking, there's a movie recently with Tom Hardy where he plays both brothers. He plays both twins and they're gangsters and stuff. And in there, one wears glasses and one doesn't, and whatever. But he's still, I mean, and nothing against Tom Hardy, because let's be honest, I love Tom Hardy in Fury Road because he doesn't say much. He's just there doing his, being the feral kid. But like, the movie allowed itself to have two different main characters who are played by the same person, but they have different motivations, they have different things, and yet at the same time, they're completely loyal to each other. And to the point where even at the end, Smoke lets Stack go and him and Mary escape. And that the scene at the end where they're in Sammy is now an old man playing, right? And he's playing in, and it's pralines is where he's playing in. That's the name of the woman from the he says it's the best, it was the best night of my life until everything went to shit. And Stack says the same thing. He goes, "It was the best night of my life until everything went to hell." Right? And that's the whole idea, is that they're all paying for their sins. Everyone's paying for their sins at the end. And Sammy did nothing. He was the one who was able to go on and live because he's the only one who escapes. Everyone else dies. Everyone else dies. So I don't know. I mean, to
Although, I
me,
mean, in some ways, the whole goal of everybody was to protect Sammy
yes.
because he
Yeah.
was the most innocent person there,
Right.
and he was the one they, and that's another, there's that layer of like, the vampire saying, you've had stuff, we've all had stuff stolen from us, but they're there to steal the music
Oh, sure.
and stories from Sammy.
Right, because
That's what
because but
they're
that's what I was saying. Is part of that fat is though, and that's I think why that scene is put in with all the where he's able to transcend time, and they show the place burning down around him. They show all of that because remember, we have a vocabulary that we, you know, like our a visual vocabulary that things we've seen, things we've experienced, whatever. As horror fans, as movie fans, we look at things differently than general pop, right? But to the general population, if you're coming into this movie, like Kelly is not a cinephile by any stretch of imagination, but that scene told her exactly what she needed to know. She needed to understand what's going to happen so that at the end, she was not quite like Kelly asked me a million fucking questions during a movie all the time, right? I literally have never seen the goddamn fucking movie. She asked me a million questions, right? So she's what that scene gave her that information. She didn't ask me questions. The first time we watched it, she goes like, oh my God, that told me. Because I understand it's kind of signposting for some of us, but I appreciated that being there. And I thought it was done with some flair and some originality instead of just signposting it like fucking Hereditary with a signpost. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is why I think.
Well, and the other thing too, though, is that scene sets up the scene with what's his name? With the vampire, right? I'm blanking on his name right now. Rennick, right? With him and his crew, where they're doing the Irish folk song, right? Because it's specifically said, oh, this is their ritual, right? So we get not only all the black musicians and going, you know, connecting back to you know, African traditional tribal music and stuff, but we also get, you know, Beau and Grace, right? And we see a traditional Chinese dancer in there as well. Right. And then so now we're going to the other side of it. And it's like, OK, you know, I get it. I've heard this long enough how white people stole all black people's music. I've heard it. OK. But at the same time, there's traditional here. This is traditional Irish and Western European music that was theirs. Right. So that's their ritual. Right. So it's the idea that, like you were saying, it's everybody's a sinner in their own way. Right. So but this is where they belong. Right, this is their ritual and tradition that binds them together, same as it does for all the folks in the juke joint. You know,
and since they're paying for those sins, everyone pays in their own way. And at the end of the day, Sammy is looked upon as being obviously he's the preacher boy, right? He's the one who's innocent. He's never killed anybody. He doesn't steal from people. He's doing the right thing. And his sin is the music, but it's his gift too. His ability to be so connected to music, so get so deep into it that he can transcend time. He can transcend that, even though his father doesn't look at it that way. His father being the preacher looks at that as being his sin. And the reality is he still, and to pay for his sins, he must go forward and tell the story. That is why everyone protects him. I mean, he
right.
You know, his is to go forward and keep telling that story, because without storytellers, and we know this is true, right? Without storytellers, whether it be around a campfire, in song and whatever, traditions are not passed on. And John Carpenter talks about this, right? And he goes, you know, when you used to sit around the campfire or the at night, the stories were about the enemy that's out there. The enemy is out there, but the fire keeps us safe here. We are safe here, but out there is the evil. Until you think, well, there's the evil inside me, and this fire doesn't keep me safe from the evil inside of me. And I think that's what the idea is, that the vampires are outside. We have to invite them in. We have to do whatever. And they're the evil. But at the same time, they're looking to get his stories, his abilities, so they can then go on to their loved ones as well. The true evil in this, and I'll be honest with you, I am very happy they did not go as heavy-handed as I think some people might have. We know that the Klan's there, but we don't have to see them all in hoods. This is not I'm thinking of the scene from Django, right? Which is a great,
Django, yeah.
which is a great scene, which is a great scene where they're all putting, and goes, who didn't cut no fucking holes in the hood? I can't see shit, right? Right? But that's the thing is,
that's set in a different period of the Klan history.
Right. No, I understand. What I'm saying is like that, but I'm saying is like that made perfect sense in Django. It needed to be there. That's Tarantino telling that story. This is not that story. But by having the Klan show up the next morning to fucking kill everybody and literally smoke just laying waste to all of them. And all he wanted to do, and this is what I'm saying, is like the whole idea that like to find his peace, right? All he wanted was his child back. And when he came back there, and that scene, and I know it's different for me than it is for other people, but for him to kneel down at his child's grave, right? And you're like, okay, like, cool. Like we're 30 minutes into this movie and, you know, it's upsetting and to in a different way for different people. But like the idea that they've come back to the people that they honestly love. I mean, I know Stack doesn't treat Mary well, but he truly loves her. He says that to her. He goes, I love you so much. I want to keep you safe. Right. And that's the whole idea. And Smoke loves, I blanked on her name. It's the medicine woman. I cannot think of her
Annie.
Name. Annie. And he wants her. I mean, he loves her, but the loss of the child can ruin things. It's different for everybody. So
well, yeah. but I did like that also though, because at the end after he you know Smoke goes to town on the Klan,
mm-hmm,
and he gets shot and he's bleeding out, right? And he sees Annie and the baby.
Yeah.
Right? So that even I like that because even, you know, Smoke, who was a sinner.
Yeah.
Right? He can find redemption. He can find salvation,
right?
Because all sinners can find salvation, right? And so he does, in fact, get it. And he's, you know, he says that, or you know, Stack says it to Lisa. She goes, "You'll burn in hell." He goes, "I'll save a room right next to you, right next to me for you, right?" Well, Annie saves a spot for him in heaven.
He says it to
right.
Mary. He says it to Mary.
To Mary, not
I'll
Lisa.
Burn hell. He goes, "I'll save a place." Well, and the funny part is. Is that Lisa and not Quan? What's her husband's name?
Bo and Grace.
Bo and Grace, not Lisa. Yeah. Lisa's the daughter.
Lisa's the daughter. Yeah. Yeah.
Bo and Grace. That she loves her husband so much that she goes in and like, I mean, when she throws the Molotov cocktail and Rennick smacks it away, she catches on fire before she even stabs her husband with the stake, and they burn together. Like, she doesn't try to save herself. She can't live without her husband, without this in her life, and so she sacrifices herself to kill.
It's like a straight up Rodan situation.
Yes,
man.
Yes, it very much. Yes, but the thing is, those little bits of imagery there, and I understand that, like, you know, you could watch this movie and not read any of this stuff into it. You could miss the metaphors, or you could miss you could think that the vulture circling just whatever it might be, or even miss the vultures. Because I'll be very honest with you, the first vulture, the first time you see the vultures, there's only one, and it's following the truck as he pulls up.
And it's in the background to the side. It's not very prominently. But there's also a lot of shots during the day where you see the moon up in the sky too. I noticed
it's very that there's things done, obviously. I mean, it's all done on purpose, obviously, but the idea is that as you're looking at these things, you could very easily just watch this movie for a horror movie. I said this in the chat. This is a movie. I mean, I've said it. This is, I mean, I try to think back on the movies of 2025, like what's the best movies I've seen this year, whatever. Now, there are a few I haven't seen yet that I would like to see. Like, we still haven't had a chance to watch Bring Her Back. But, like, I've seen a number of the quote-unquote big movies this year, and this is probably my favorite horror movie so far this year. But this is a movie that I don't think I would put this on unless I meant to put it on. Does that make sense? Right?
Yeah.
Like, and a lot of people compare this to the movie From Dusk Till Dawn, which is literally one of my favorite movies of all time. I love From Dusk Till Dawn.
Built for fun.
That movie, I will watch From Dusk Till Dawn. That's a feel-good movie to me because it's funny as hell. There's fucking, I mean, just Cheech Marin
it's
going.
It's unhinged.
Yeah, but I mean, Cheech Marin just about the pussy is amazing.
Yeah.
Hot pussy, fat pussy.
If you could,
If you could find pussy from the paper,
by cheapest pussy, fuck it.
Right? That's what I'm saying, is that movie is designed to feel good. You laugh, you have a good time. That's a movie, you, as Luke would say, you have a few adult beverages and you have a great time with it. This is like, very much like I said, like, I hate to keep drawing the same conclusion, but very much like the new Candyman, which Luke and I watched the new Candyman when we were down in the city, and then we did it for the show. Like, that movie made you think. Like, you're like, okay, like, there's a lot in there. Now, it's a very different kind of story, but there's a lot in there. And it's very different in the way that, Late Night with the Devil made you think about things as well. But that was kind of, you could kind of see the writing on the wall for that. But that movie, I thought, was for a period piece, quote unquote, right? It was effective in what it did. It's not the same kind of thing.
Whereas, it's kind of pulpy and fun, where this has like, this is like, for me, the best kind of Oscar bait. This movie will win some Oscars for sure. You know, they're going to give it an Oscar for something. There's several things that they could. But it's got horror tacked onto it, which is very rare in something that's Oscar bait, unless it's Hereditary.
I'll be honest with you, is if this movie did not have vampires, if this was about the Klan, if the end of this movie was the Klan showed up and they had a gun, and there was still as much violence and stuff like that, but it wasn't all vampires, it wouldn't have made as much money. I don't mean that to be negative, but it would not have made as much money. It
would have distinguished itself from a lot of other movies that are along the same lines.
But the Academy might recognize it more,
the acting and stuff like that,
because it wasn't horror. Here, I think a lot of times that wide brushstroke of, oh, it's a horror movie, it gets written off. There was, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Haley Steinfeld is a singer, and I mean, I know she's Josh Allen's wife too, but she's a singer who's now become
doing okay for himself.
Yeah, Josh Allen's doing pretty okay for himself. You know, I'm just saying. he had a good Thursday, folks. Okay. You know, kind of thing, won the game. But I'm just saying, is like, so she, but she's known as being a singer, like a more of a pop singer kind of thing. And she was a singer for a long time. Now she's becoming an actress. She's not been in a lot of things. I don't, usually that's like the weak link in the movie. You know what I'm saying? I don't think she was weak at all. I thought Mary was a good character. Now,
no.
It's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes you get like someone who's a singer or something like that, and you're like, oh, good God. Like, perfect example of this. And I know I've said that they should have changed the ending of the movie, but when Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper were in
Star is Born,
Lady Gaga was great in that film. Like, people were like, holy shit, she can act, because they only thought she could sing. Right. And whether you like her singing or not, she was really good, because she was playing a character that I think she was able to fit herself into. This
singing is acting too.
Well, no, right. But I mean, but how many times you see singers in movies and they can't fucking act?
Yeah.
Right. You know, kind of thing. So, but that's what I'm saying, is like, it's the, you remember the rare occasions when someone who's a singer, who's predominantly a singer, can do that acting thing. Haley Steinfeld has become an actress, quote unquote, right? I mean, her first movie, I think, was Bumblebee, for fuck's sake.
No, she's been around a lot longer than that. No. She was acting when she was a kid.
Right, but okay, but was she acting like, because she wasn't the lead?
No.
In Bumblebee, she's the main, I mean, she's the main female lead in the movie. I mean, besides Bumblebee, who's like, you know, a car.
Yeah, well.
Right, you know, kind of thing. Like,
well, she was in the remake of True Grit.
She was, but she's young in that. She's
wicked young. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm saying, but in True Grit, it's not a story about her. She's just in it. You know what I'm saying? Where here, she had to act. Like, you had to, like, if she came out there and she was like, you know, middle school play production level, it would have taken you out of the film. But you believed that her and Stack had a relationship. You believe those things, you know? I mean, and again, maybe it's me. Maybe it's me because I got sucked in and I enjoyed it, that I maybe bought in more into her. Maybe some people don't think that. I don't know. I look at it this way, is there's a lot of movies that come out that are supposed to be this amazing thing, right? Like, oh my God, this is such a great film. And then you see it and you're like, okay, this was nothing spectacular, right? And then there's movies that come out and there's that horror element to them that people kind of write off. Right. And I think we've talked about a few of them in the last few movies we've talked about the newer movies. I'm thinking of Heretic. I'm thinking of The Substance. right? I'm even going back to, like, I mean, Long Legs, people were just short stroking the shit out of that movie when
Well.
it came out. But, like, because no one knew what the hell they were watching. I mean, but what happened? When Long Legs came out, people were like, oh, it's like Silence of the Lambs. It's fucking not like Silence of the Lambs at all.
No.
Right? You know, like, that just shows how
It's
they don't
got a
understand.
serial killer in
Right,
it.
exactly. Yeah. But guess what? So does fucking Dirty Harry. But that's not like
So
Silence of the
half
Lambs
the
either.
movies in the 90s,
Yeah,
yeah.
right. That's what I'm saying. So, and at the same token, so does Santa's sleigh, but he just happened to be Santa Claus. Anyway, so but
Well, I mean, the
that
only,
does it
I
for your
mean, the,
opening.
yeah, but I
The
will say, you know,
ultimate
at least
superhero story.
of those, right,
Yeah.
you know, I do kind of compare this a little bit to The Substance, right, because
Yeah.
the, you know, The Substance also had it in its own way, it's Oscar bait, right, you know, because in the case of The Substance, and you know, we talked about The Substance on this podcast, so you can go back in the archives and find that, you know, so, but The Substance in its own way was Oscar bait, right? Because of the topic and because of the cast and what have you, right? This
Yeah,
is
it's
Oscar
probably
bait
a
kind of.
career best performance by Demi Moore, too, you know?
Right. I mean, and not exactly a slouch, but you know, obviously she's doing okay
Yeah.
for herself, but yeah. So, but that kind of stuff, right? It's the same idea here where this is, like you say, I agree, this film is in its own way Oscar bait because it tackles themes and ideas that, you know, the Academy likes. You know what I'm saying? So I get it. And it's like, yes, and if that's what you have to do to make a horror film now that's going to get attention, is you have to be relevant, whether that's socially relevant, culturally relevant, whatever, you know, then I guess, you know, then that's the way you got to do business, right? If that's what you got to do. So I agree with you. I mean, I think that this allowed, and you also got to look at it from a commercial standpoint too, right? Perhaps that, you know, would Ryan Coogler, even at this point in his career, been allowed to make a gangster film set in the 1930s Mississippi Delta? If it wasn't, oh, by the way, there's vampires in it. You know, so it's like it also kind of beggars that question. Is like, well, how much of this is, well, we can do it that way, but if we do it this way, we can get our film made, right? You also hope it's not like, you know, just a note on the back of a cocktail napkin. It's like, this movie's great, put vampires in it. Right, if you go on Bots, Bugs, and Babes, you've heard my brother and I play Pitch Storm,
Yes.
and
Oh
in
my
Pitch
God.
Storm you get the note from the studio, you know, slide it on in there in a cocktail napkin, so you hope that's not the case here.
And honestly, I think at this point, you know, when Ryan Coogler's attached to a film, whether he's just directing or writing and directing like he normally does, I mean, because he's so involved in it, I think what you're getting a lot of times is, again, and I'm not saying there's not studio influence, but I think you're getting a lot what he wants to put out there. You know what I'm saying? Like he's earned the cachet now. Whether it be Creed or all the Black Panther movies or whatever, he's earned that cachet that he can kind of make his movie. You know, not everyone is in the you know, not everyone gets to be like George Romero and just say, fuck the system, I'm gonna make whatever I want, and then, you know, make Night of the Living Dead and you're like, holy shit, dude, okay. Like, you know, you fucking change an industry. You know, a lot of guys gotta work through to get to that level. And I think he's at that level now. And I think we've now seen it. See, Jordan Peele is the perfect example of this. No one in their right mind thought Jordan Peele was gonna make, I mean, he's a comedian. How is he gonna make a movie that's any good?
So
Right?
as an aside,
Yeah.
no, just on that same vein,
Yeah.
okay, we saw the commercials for Jordan Peele's new movie for him,
Well,
right?
it's not his movie, he's producing it.
He's producing it, right? But his name is all over it, right? Yeah, and I said, guys, I said that is, I said, okay, Jordan Peele, he makes these really scary ass movies. Is like, that's Timothy from the Mr. Garvey sketches, and they're like, no, it's not. I'm like, oh yes, it is. You know,
Yeah,
they refuse to believe me.
but that's the thing is too, when you watch that, like when we first heard Jordan Peele is gonna be making a horror movie, you're like, all right, what the fuck? Like, what is he doing, right? And like then we get Out, you're like, Brew, are you kidding? And then they're like, oh, he's making another one. You're like, well, I liked Get Out. Let's see what Us is all about. And you're like, dude, are you kidding? Like, that's why I know some people did not like Nope. I liked Nope. I know we've
I
talked
did
about it
too. I
here,
like Nope.
right? And
I like Nope.
I know some people didn't like it, right? It was not as like because it wasn't the other ones, right? It wasn't like Us or Get Out. But he made the movie he wanted to make. And let's be honest here, as weird as it is to have Jaws in the sky, right? The fucking monkey part of Nope, with the kid with the monkey going crazy,
yeah,
is fucking nuts. So, I mean, be as it may, but now we have the thing is now because remember, Candyman was what's her I forgot her name, goddamn. There was her first movie Zoe. I cannot remember her name. Anyway, but it was her. The idea
it's like Natasha or something like that.
Yeah. It was her first. He gave her the opportunity to make. It wasn't him making. It was her, and he let her have. Like he let her have. This is what I want to do, and this is how I want to do this, and this is how I'm going to tie this in. And it was her thing, along with what was because she kind of wrote some of the screenplay with one of. It was the person she was writing with, and whatever. Like, but he said, "I believe in her," right? So when we see the trailers for him. Whether it's getting lambasted by people right now some of the reviews, right? But he believed in whoever the director is. He believed in it and said, "Yes, I'm going to give you a chance." I can tell you this: I haven't seen him. I have no idea if it's a good movie or a bad movie at this recording. I haven't seen it, but I can guarantee you, it's not going to be the same shit that came out from somebody else. It's going to be something different. It's just like every single A24 movie. It's like, what is this? Good or bad? It ain't going to be the same shit as somebody else. I saw a commercial the other day for, fuck's it called? Friendship. It's supposed to be a comedy. It looks like the most depressing thing in the world, but it's A24. I guarantee you it doesn't look like anything else because you're making something that's different. You know, we saw that with, they had the Exorcist, the first Exorcist. Is that what it's called? No, the first Omen, not that. It was the first Omen. Came out, and then they were like, "That's Immaculate." It's the same movie. I'm like, "It's not. They're just about nuns." Immaculate pushes the envelope far way further. It's doing something different. It's got an ending that you ain't gonna fucking forget. That's the idea. Is that when you're able to do something, when you have enough cachet to have people believing you to put something out there, even if this was and again, we're not saying it is, but this could have been a gangster movie, a straight up gangster movie, gangsters fighting the Klan.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in the 70s, that's what you would have got, you know, kind of thing. I mean, everyone would have had, you know, giant afros and bell bottoms on, but I'm just saying. But
well, not if it was a period piece. But
I don't know, man. Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe if it was, yeah.
I was going to say, it might have even been. I
thought
right,
that real you know? Quick.
I'm just saying. And I mean,
it's like, yeah, that's right. Turkey right here in 1932.
I actually, one of my notes is I'd like to see the 70s version of this movie.
Mm-hmm. Could you,
really interesting.
So Kelly said to me today, she goes, well, because she goes, the ending's not really setting up a sequel. Because she now knows everything's got to set up a sequel, right? I said, well, the sequel to this movie is Stack and Mary's story. It's their story through the years. Because there is no story for Sammy. Sammy's story is that he now becomes a famous blues musician and whatever.
It's locked in, yeah.
Yeah, right. It's their story. But I don't think there's anyone asking, not that it couldn't be interesting, but I don't think anyone's asking for their story. You know what I'm saying? It's very much in the vein of like, you know, sometimes you watch like they just made a sequel to the movie Megan, right? And Megan's about a killer doll, and now this new movie's about her being a fucking like a robot like hero or some shit like that, right?
But
was anyone asking for that movie? I don't know if it's good or not. Again, I have not watched it yet. What I'm saying is, I don't think anyone's asking for that. I don't think anyone's asking to find out what happened to Stack and Mary. I think we can fill that in for ourselves. I don't need
it's
to see.
Better, well, I think it's I'll better be honest to with fill you. The,
yeah, you're better to fill it in yourself.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Because that doesn't even from just freestyling. That's not a movie, right? That's a comic, exactly. Or that's a series,
yes,
right?
Yes.
That's
yes,
them. Jumping in on them through the years, we get this, that, and the other. If they ever, yeah. You know, maybe if Coogler makes another film set in the same universe in the 70s, that you see them, right? We don't. Right. It's just a little Easter egg type of thing, right? They're like it's kind of like Spike and Drusilla and Angel, right? In the back, in like, the you know, filling in their history here and there in episodes of Buffy type of thing.
Right, exactly.
Like I think if you were to make a movie with them in it again, you could do like if you were to do it. And make it like interesting to me, it would have to be a completely different kind of movie. You just use those characters, even though they're vampires, and set them in the 70s or the 60s or the 50s or yeah, you know, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, but put them in the 70s with that prince, right?
Yeah, a whole different, give it a whole different feel to it. And I just realized he wears the Bill Cosby sweater at the end. And I realized that was to be like, okay, this is in the
80s. No, it's 1992. It's 1992.
It was 92?
Yeah, the whole point is it's supposed to, I think it's the same date, 60 years in the future, 60 years ahead.
But that's the brand of those sweaters are Kugli sweaters. So yes, it's probably a little bit of a play on the director's name too.
Yeah.
But
Well, the other thing you're talking about the Cosby connection, right? It's like, you know, that Sammy probably ended up as, you know, playing the kid, some kid's uncle on the Cosby show. It's like, you're going to meet another uncle. This one's a jazz musician.
With scars down his face.
I know you guys didn't see, well, I say this, I'm pretty sure none of you have seen Smile 2, right? The sequel. I don't know if you guys have seen it.
No,
right?
I haven't seen Smile 1.
Okay. Well, but the idea is that like Smile 2. So Smile 2. And again, we watch Smile, right? You watch Smile and the movie's good. And Haley watched me. It's fine, whatever. But like Smile 2 takes the same demon that you're dealing with, whatever. And it changes it enough to make that movie kind of be unique to itself, but yet live in the same universe. Right. There's no reason that we need to see all of the, you know, let's see what Stack and Mary are up to this week, guys. Like, you know, we don't need to see their adventures, you know, in the Mystery Machine, right? But if you are able to create something else where maybe it's another vampire story, maybe it's another supernatural story, it doesn't have to be vampires per se, but like just something else where you can tie in and make it all live in the same world, it would give you a sense of like, okay, in this world.
What if it's a Blade sequel?
Well, I'm just saying, well, that would be hard to do.
Yeah, they
keep canceling and rebooting those things. But like in this world, we already know that vampires are real. So if I am believing that in this universe that we're in, that vampires themselves do in fact exist, then why couldn't whatever else might be exist? Why couldn't this happen? You could buy into that idea. And then maybe this is set in the 1940s or the 1950s and, you know, whatever kind of thing, playing off of the different kinds of stereotypes. Cause you know, obviously, they talk about Jim Crow laws literally in like the first 5 minutes of this movie. You know, where is its time frame on its sleeve? You know, we know it's the 30s. First of all, everything they're driving is the 30s. Everything looks like it, whatever. Even if the way they're speaking might be a little harsh for what we think about, you know, of that time. Because what do we think of that time? It's the movies that we've seen from that time, you know, in that period.
Right, yeah.
You know, there's...
Right, well, they can't use the word coos in of 1930s movie.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Well, I mean, there's a number of things they say in there that
there's one of the lines in this that I really liked but knew I couldn't use is when Stack is locked in the room after he's been killed, right? And he stabs the knife through it and Smoke looks through and he goes, "Stack, that you?" And he goes, "No, it's Jim Crow." And then he says the word I can't say, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, but that's the idea.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is in there. So again, whether people enjoyed the movie or didn't enjoy the movie, I mean, the majority of people saw this must have liked it because this movie's got it made a ton of money. It was hot for a number of weeks, and to be honest with you,
critics liked it.
Yeah, it was critically accepted too. Now I know there's been a number of backlash of late. People saying, "Oh, it's all paid critics and whatever." I don't know, man. Like, there's a lot of paid critics watching a lot of other shit too. That doesn't mean that it's anything, but you make your own decisions. And that's the great part about this. And that's what we always say to you guys. Like, just because, and again, we may not all agree, we don't always agree. I mean, obviously, you know, a lot of times we like the same stuff because we just kind of like the same stuff, but we don't always agree. And there's movies that I will hate, but that, you know, one of you guys will love. It's okay. It's not that that's, one's right and one's wrong. It's what it appeals to, who we are, or what our, or, you know, what we're bringing to the film, or what we, whatever, and how I react to a movie, and how Luke reacts, and how Hero reacts, and how you react, Chris, all can be very different than each other. We all bring our different experiences to what you know, to bear upon when we're watching these things. And the one thing I can say, though, is whether you like the movie or don't like the movie, the one, and this is true, and I've said this about other movies too that I just could not stand, this and Nosferatu. And again, a lot of people love Nosferatu, but other people thought it was boring as shit. The costuming was great. I mean, I thought both movies visually looked great. Different.
Oh, yeah. I mean, both of these, we talk about two modern Hollywood vampire movies. They didn't leave none of that budget was spent on catering, man. It's all there on the screen.
That's right. No,
I got to give it that, right? That was one of my things. It's visually.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, visually, this movie is fantastic.
Yeah.
You know?
I think,
I love the, like I said, we talked about, Chris, you talked about the colors and stuff at the beginning. Yep. It's like that drab, but the bright
like an old
sunshine
photo.
And all that. It's like, yep, I love it.
I think their downtown was old, like real old pictures of a town from that time period that they sort of 3D modeled into the background, because it was... It was a little bit fake in a very purposeful way, you know, almost like you were looking at a tinted photograph or something like that.
Yes.
And as the movie gets going, it gets more and more realistic as it ramps up.
And you can kind of tell too, look at, and this I think, I mean, obviously I do this on purpose. Look at the, not just how Stack and Smoke are dressed, but the colors they're wearing, you know, kind of thing. They're not flamboyant colors, to say, like, kind of thing. They're not like flashy yellows and brights, whatever, but they stand out amongst everybody else because
everybody else is sort of living in this hell of like working on the plantation and getting paid in scrip.
Yep.
And everybody, like some of them are alcoholics, but and there's all this tragedy. They've gone out and like, but in order to get themselves to where they can be that flamboyant in public, they've had to do some, you know, they went to war for the United States, but they had to become work for Capone to be able to have that moment that they were just dying to have, where they dropped the bag of money into the Klan guy's hand and said, "We're buying the whole thing, and with the, you know, and you stay the fuck out." And the Klansman is dumbstruck because he's got a bag full of money. So he's like, "Ooh, a bag full of money," but he's obviously a Klansman. And they're loving it because they like switched the power dynamic right there, but they had to do awful things to get to that point, you know, and to be able to have that. And at the same point, they're still, their lives are, you know, the Klan's gonna come and try and kill them, you know. So
what I was saying is, like, where normally in a movie they'd be like, we want to show somebody's flamboyant and, like, you know, more like they're out there, they would dress them so gaudy looking, right? But like the what they're wearing, I mean, they're wearing nice suits and the whole thing, but they're, you know, they got, you know, and but they always have a hat on. They're looking like, they look like, you know, they look like gangsters, what they really look like, obviously, because
they're gangsters, but they're like, we are going to look sophisticated,
right,
too.
And
we're showing our sophistication and our intelligence.
Yeah.
Right. But instead of making that garish, like where you kind of like, you know, really like, hey, look at this. They dress them. They're not bright, but they're more colorful than everyone else who's kind of been dragged down into the into where they are. And then but then once you get to the, you know, and everyone in the juke is wearing all their, like, they're wearing their old beat up clothes. No one's wearing nice clothes except them. It makes them stand out even more, which I understand is the idea of the whole thing. But it's subtle when you first see them, because you're like, well, they have, like, you know, he's Michael B. Jordan, but you're like, they got to be somebody's. They got to be somebody's. Like, you don't even know who they are, but you got to be somebody's to be dressed that way. And that's the whole thing, is that the whole time matter whichever whether with Smoke or with Stack, they're very different characters, but they are very much deliberate in what they do. They know what they want. They like, you know, it's like I said, it's. I'm hopeful that it gets the recognition it should get. I always am worried that the recognition might be, you know, skewed because of the horror thing. I could totally see this getting something to do with like the visual effects or like not just scenery, like, you know what I'm saying, like, but like the same stuff like Nosferatu is going to wind up getting. It's all the, like, you know, set decoration and the
costume stuff.
Right. Yeah, all that stuff. Because
even though you could make all kinds of different, especially supporting actors.
Sure, 100%.
Like, there's so many, but yeah, you're right. But that's what they're going to go for, cinematography or something like that. Yeah. You know. But
anyway, I mean, it's what it is. So, folks, if you want to see Sinners, it's definitely available. It's on HBO Max. I have the Blu-ray, the 4K here, which is how we watched it. And then we streamed it this morning on, when we watched it, Kelly and I watched this morning, we streamed it real quick on Prime Video. Cause I got the 4K, it came with the slip for it. You know, it's one of those things that if you haven't seen it, to me, it's worth the two hours, 2.5 hours, whatever it technically runs, you know, whatever kind of thing. To me, it's worth your time watching. You know, and you may not agree with us. You might think it's not worth it, but to me, I've spent time doing way, way worse stuff for that amount of time. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
It's 2 hours and 17 minutes, sure.
It goes by quickly too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I can tell you this. Nosferatu was 2.5, right? Something like that. Nosferatu at times goes by quick, and at other times it feels like 2.5.
A lot of Nosferatu feels like 2.5 hours.
Yeah, but it's beautiful the whole time.
It takes its time. Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely. Bram Stoker Dracula's itself.
I could sat through 3.5 hours in Nosferatu if it wanted to be 3.5 hours long.
But I'm saying it does. You know, it kind of does its own thing. So, but anyway.
Yeah, I just hope that I hope that Coogler sort of does more of a Jordan Peele thing where he just sort of starts doing his, instead of doing like, you know, a Marvel movie or something like that, doing full, you know, full cloth stuff like this and different stuff. I hope, I think a lot of filmmakers have also realized that it's, you know, and I'm noticing that with Jordan Peele, with Osgood Perkins, you know, the genre, especially the genre directors, that it's like, and even the guy who made fucking Hereditary, I noticed like all his movies since Hereditary have been pretty different, except for the one right after. It was sort of still like a religious cult movie. Yeah. But like, you know, there's a lot of like people just like, I'm just going to explore what I want to do, and you know, maybe like the Scorsese's of the world have carved enough of a niche for people to just sort that to that maybe they're start Hollywood is starting to understand that it's almost better to try to do something like that than to just repeat the same thing over and over again, not that they're not doing that.
It's not
a lot of
that,
the people that are like directors that are coming out where people are like, I'm paying attention to the director of the movie.
Those as much as this one didn't work for me, I'm still going to be interested in seeing what he does does next, because I did like Black Panther. I did like the first two Creed movies. Black Panther was a piece of crap, but whatever.
They were good. Well, I mean, you can't.
I mean, how much? I mean, you know, the death of Chadwick Boseman, right? Yeah, you couldn't predict that, right?
So, should have just recast.
Right. So it's tough, right? You're handed. Unfortunately, like you say, they should have recast, but that wasn't the deck or the cards he was dealt, right? So you got to do with what you got, and that's especially someone as. With as much presence and charisma as Chadwick Boseman had, so that's tough.
So,
but yeah,
one of the things I was going to say is because obviously Michael B. Jordan's in.
He plays Killmonger.
Killmonger,
right? Yeah. Right. So, good God, I just butchered his name here. Bowman Chapman had not passed.
Chadwick Boseman.
I know I messed it up.
Boatman Chadwick.
If he had not passed away, I wonder if he would have been in this. Do you know what I'm saying? I wonder if he would have had a role in this movie and not been Michael B. Jordan as both roles, like whatever kind of thing.
It would have probably been the two of them as the two brothers,
right? Because again, and there's nothing wrong. I really enjoyed the dichotomy between Stax and Smoke.
Yeah.
Right.
But two great performances.
But could you imagine like the two of them acting against each other now? Because Michael B. Jordan, as much as some people tried to like, oh, he's just a good looking guy, whatever. He's a good actor. You know, kind of thing. Like,
yeah, I've liked him in everything I've seen him in.
If there's a movie that he's in that you don't like, it's not because of his acting. Put it that way.
Yeah,
you know
that
what I'm
movie.
Saying?
That movie's called Space Jam 2.
Oh well.
Oh God, that was bad.
That was not.
We got Michael Jordan. Oh wait.
Yeah. But again, that wasn't his fault. There's another.
He's the only good part of the movie. I'm not.
Well. Yeah. I did enjoy the credits rolling. But I'm just saying, it's one of those things that you wonder if, like, that maybe, again, things always, like, whatever happens, that when you wind up having people passing away and do whatever, it changes the scope of certain other films and whatever. Anyway, be that as it may, we don't know what's coming next for him, kind of thing. I mean, maybe he gets to make another movie he wants to make. Maybe he goes, I don't know. I mean, kind of thing. You got the Creed movies made a ton of money, kind of thing. So, but I think those have kind of run their course as well. You know what I'm saying? Kind of like the way that, like, so you don't have to go back and revisit the same territory again. So anyway, we'll see. Cause let's be honest, Osgood Perkins, his back-to-back movies are what? Long Legs and The Monkey. Could they be any more different than each other? Kind of thing. So, but he is it, anyway.
Seems to be doing okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like Josh Allen and Haley Steinfeld. They're doing okay.
Yeah. I hope those kids make it.
Those zany kids.
Duke's going to be okay.
Hey.
Speaking of those crazy kids.
Oh, boy.
This has nothing to do with anything. But been watching the football, right? And so you get these commercials for... it's for the Tubi is always free.
Yes.
And they have the one where it's the teenage romantic dramas are always free. And the girl's like, wait, so they're free forever. And it's like, so I have to choose between Brad and Chad forever. And the guy's like, who's Chad? I asked my daughter, I said, are you team Chad or team Brad? She goes, oh, team Chad all the way. Right. So, Chad. Apropos of absolutely nothing.
Okay,
So go team Chad, right?
Chad Powers, got it.
Pick poor Robin clean. Pick poor Robin clean. Pick his head, I pick his feet. I would have picked his body, but it wasn't fit to eat. Oh, I pick poor Robin clean. Pick poor Robin clean. I'll be satisfied having a family. Lord, didn't that jaybird laugh when I picked poor Robin clean. Poor Robin clean. Picked poor Robin clean. Oh, didn't that jaybird laugh when I picked poor Robin.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Test, test, say duh. Good luck.